High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel alright.
Welcome, best friends from today, best friends from the days of yore, new boyfriends and girlfriends. Oh, and an extra special shout out to that long lost pen pal who's reemerged in your life. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez, and the party's at my place this evening. But first, school is still in session, and we have some homework to chat about.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
Did you have a fun time doing your homework this week? Did you have a fun time with the old Netflix and chill? Of course, today we're talking about To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You, and I hope you watched the original, too, To All the Boys I Loved Before. Both were on Netflix, of course. And today we have a returning guest from our original episode. From the first film, Jenna Guillaume is here, the author, the great. I'm so happy to have her on, and I think we have a really cool episode, a really awesome episode, about this new film, about continuing the story between Laura Jean and Peter, and, you know, maybe some other characters come in. But you know that. You've seen the movie. You've done your homework. Did you do your other homework? Did you listen to last week's episode on Twilight New Moon? Of course you did. Now remember, we're going to be doing that next week again because we had to stop halfway. It was a long episode. It was a crazy episode. And I don't know. I'm excited for you to hear part two. And big thank you to Kate Hudson for doing that. She'll obviously be on again next week. But before that, To All the Boys, hope you enjoyed it. Maybe not as much as the first one, maybe you did, I don't know, but we're going to chat about it. Whoa, whoa, whoa! And by the way, this is a movie. Well, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say the whoa, whoa, whoa count isn't where we wanted it to be. But the bell doesn't dismiss you, I dismiss you. Have you done your other homework? Have you hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to us right now, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify? Or remember, you could also listen to us on the flagship, cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me, host of so many other great shows, including the other shows on Friday. Fridays are for fun. Tom Tom Club, you know that. The Tom Cruise Experience, that's not the name of the show, but I thought that'd be cool. I think it's just Cruise Club, of course. And then, Hanks for the Memories. One week it's about Tom Cruise movies, one week it's about Tom Hanks movies, and it's really great. And also my other show on the network, P.S. I Love Hoffman, where we discuss the films of Philip Seymour Hoffman. We just released a secret Valentine's Day one, Along Came Polly, a polarizing film, but I think you'll enjoy the episode. It's a rewatch with me and my good friend, the foodie films man himself, Kyle Reinfried. And again, you can find that at cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me, or wherever you get your podcasts. And just a reminder, guys, class participation is a huge part of your grade. And it's been good lately. I've been enjoying it. So you can participate on Facebook, on Twitter, or on the gram, on Instagram, at High School Slumber Party. Just put it in the search bar. You'll find it. And I can't wait to hear from you guys. You could also email at highschoolslumberparty@gmail.com. Really appreciate the emails. I'll get back to you, I promise. So without further ado, Let's get talking to all the boys. I've been waiting for this moment for a while. So, I'll leave you with a song from the soundtrack. I don't know if it's from the soundtrack, because I don't know if that's released, but it was the first song featured in this film, actually. And it's homage to one of my favorite teen films. Not one that's really related to this movie, but it's a fun little opening scene, because it, like I said, it pays homage, silent H, and that's The Crystals, Then He Kissed Me. And the homage is to Adventures in Babysitting, but you know that. So pack your favorite jammies, tell your mother you're sleeping over at Brian's, because we're about to get our party on. Class dismissed. Okay, Jenna, happy to have you back. I feel like, you know, we talked about the original film, and now we're here to talk about this film. Like, it's a nice feeling, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here, and especially to talk about To All the Boys I've Loved Before again.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's get the introductions out of the way. Just a reminder on High School Slumber Party, you just introduce yourself by saying your name, your high school, and your graduating year. I know there's no high school teen names in Australia, so all good there.
So I'm Jenna Guillaume. I graduated from Lake Illawarra High School in 2003. I feel so old.
I mean, there was a couple times in this film when I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm old. Like, some references they made of, like, when they were little kids, and I'm like, wasn't that just a couple years ago? But
yes.
Whatever. I digress. I mean, we can still enjoy these films as adults, can't we?
Eternally, I hope so.
So, of course, today we're talking about To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You, the sequel, the big Netflix sequel, came out last week. Not on Valentine's Day, but definitely feels like for Valentine's Day. But before any of that, Jenna, what have you been up to? What's it been like since last time we talked?
Since last time we talked, I've been freelancing full time and as just doing entertainment journalism, talking about movies like To All the Boys, and also working on my second book and getting ready to launch my first book in America, which is very exciting.
Still waiting, and that's very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's finally happening. April 2020, though, it'll be released in North America.
Oh, awesome. Wow, so soon.
Yeah. So What I Like About Me.
That's great news. I'm really excited to hear that. That's awesome. And like I said, excited to have you back here talking this film. And I want to apologize, too. I'm a little under the weather, so if I sniffle, it's not because I'm worried about the fate of John Ambrose. It's, you know, just because of my illness. So let's get started then. I mean, every week I read the, like, back of the DVD, but this is a Netflix film and they're always short. So this one is just, Laura Jean is officially Peter's girlfriend. So everything should be perfect, right? But feelings grow complicated when an old crush re-enters her life. Very bland, very generic, but...
Yeah, it is. I mean, it gives you a little taste of what's to come.
Certainly, definitely. Okay, so when we left the last film, I guess this is, you know, we'll start kind of hot off the bat. We kind of saw, you know, John Ambrose come to the door, but this is a different John Ambrose, and I'm assuming they're just like kind of not acknowledging that scene at all, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like a mid-credits scene, so... I guess they can just say it's not officially canon. I mean, we did see John Ambrose as a little kid in the first movie in a flashback, but again, it's a flashback. So I feel like they're just retconning like that whole thing. That's fine. I'm not mad that Jordan Fisher was cast as John Ambrose McLaren because he is so dreamy and perfect for this role. So I understand why, because I think, you know, for the first movie, the guy that they cast, Jordan Bircher, he doesn't have much experience, I'm sure. He very much looked like John Ambrose looks in the book. So I think that's why they cast him. But for the second movie, it's understandable that they'd want someone maybe with a bit more star power.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I think since Netflix controls this whole thing, maybe they should just like erase that from the first film. I don't know. But if you're going to do something like this, you got to get someone who's going to just like really like affect how people watch this film. And Jordan Fisher certainly is the breakout star of this movie. I'm seeing all stuff on the internet about him. He's arguably what, like, you know, Peter Kavinsky was for the first film. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think that's interesting because, like you say, like, they really needed someone who was going to compete with that Peter Kavinsky factor from the first movie. And I know when it was first revealed that there was going to be this love triangle, if you haven't read the books, I know I did see people surprised and being like, no, like, we love Peter. We don't want to see anyone else but Peter. But, of course, Jordan Fisher and John Ambrose McLaren is so charming that you can't help but be a little bit swayed, just like Lara Jean.
Absolutely. And the big criticism, too, on the internet has kind of been that, for better or worse. But when we first spoke, you kind of clued me in on how the books went. So I kind of knew that this was coming. So I didn't have so much of a problem with it.
Want to read this instead? Remember, it's only alone.
That it is. Dear John Ambrose, do you remember the Halloween party at Matt Kaplan's barn? I planned my costume for weeks. I was so excited. I didn't tell anyone what I was going to be. And then I got there. It's like everyone except me got the cool kid memo that no one really dresses up for Halloween anymore. I felt so lame, like I didn't fit in. And then you walked in as a deviled egg, and I realized maybe I'm lame in a cool way. And that's when I knew. I knew it all the way down to my candy red sneakers. I love you, John Ambrose. I really love you. Why, oh why, do you have to move away? Maybe someday we'll meet again and you'll never know I felt any of this. But I'll know. I'll always know that once upon a time, my heart was yours.
I mean, not many additions to the cast aside for Jordan Fisher. Of course, though, you know, there are some additions like Holland Taylor, who plays Stormy. And I thought she was great as well.
I thought she was fantastic. I would have actually liked to see a little bit more of her, but there was kind of a few like divergent plot lines that they were balancing. So I understand that it was hard, but I thought she was wonderful. And that, like, that nursing home that she lived in that Lara Jean and John Ambrose volunteered at was just fabulous.
Yeah, so, you know, pretty much all I do is watch high school films. I thought it was so fun the way they introduced it because it reminded me of how so many high school films introduce, like, the cliques in high school or where everything was. So when we see this nursing home and it's like that, I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is a breath of fresh air. Like, I love it. So I couldn't agree more with that.
I didn't even think of that, but that's a really good point, the way Stormy leads Lara Jean around and is like, yeah, showing her all the different groups. That's so funny.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. So I'm going to ask you this probably a lot today. Was this in the book as well, this whole, you know, nursing home storyline?
Oh, yeah, it's a major part of it.
Okay.
And it's been a while since I read the book, but if I remember correctly, Stormy is actually John Ambrose's grandmother in the book.
Oh, that's interesting.
Don't get mad at me, book fans, if I get this wrong, but from memory... from memory, like, I don't know that he was necessarily volunteering at the nursing home. He was visiting his grandmother and then, like, Lara Jean was volunteering there and that's how they kind of came together.
Oh.
So they've changed it a little bit for the movie, which I thought was interesting. I guess he doesn't really need to be her grandson. I guess it makes Stormy a little bit more of an objective matchmaker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, the nursing home is a big part of it, and I actually thought overall the movie was very faithful to the book.
Oh, that's good to hear. Someone who wasn't in this film was his name Josh from the first one?
Yes, Josh. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's complaining that he wasn't there.
I was just gonna say that. It took me to the end to kind of like realize that. I'm like, hey, wait a second. They just totally wrote this guy out.
And they don't even mention him, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But, like, I watched P.S. I Still Love You immediately, and then I went back and rewatched To All the Boys I Loved Before, mm-hmm. and it did strike me of, like, oh, yeah, I remember now. Josh was actually a really major part of this movie, and they've just totally forgotten him in the second one. He's not really in the second book either. I think he does get mentioned, but I think he's away at college. And Lara Jean, yeah, Lara Jean's very much over him. Actually, no, because the book picks up straight after the first one. So he must still be there in some capacity. And actually, the movie picks up straight after the first one.
Like I said, he wasn't missed, but it was a little weird that he's not even mentioned at all. Like,
yeah.
He's like because a major part of why she does everything she does in the first film. And then here, totally. Just like, eh.
I just realized, because I think I had in my head of like, oh yeah, he's gone off to college. But no, it literally picks up straight away and they're still in the same school year. So he should still be there. But look.
So weird.
I'm not mad that he's not there. That's fine.
That's the thing. Like, even though like, you know, from a story point, logically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I've heard very little to no people complaining about this, and I can't disagree. Like, that would have just made it so convoluted. Maybe they could have had a throwaway line, like, oh, he moved or something, but they're just like, nah.
I think they know we don't care enough, and they don't care enough. I also think, didn't the actor, like, tweet some problematic things? So they probably just, like, want to sweep it under the rug.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, he was sort of like the opposite Peter in every way.
Yes. Yeah. So look, no one misses Josh.
That's for sure. But mostly, you know, it's the same cast, Lana Condor and such. And, you know, Hot Dad, all the other cool people still in the film. I guess, what did you think about everyone's roles here? This movie really leans on the whole now that Peter and Lara Jean are dating, what it's like. I mean, that's like most of the plot here.
Yeah, which I think it's not really a story we see explored often. Most of the time with high school movies especially, but rom-coms in general, it's all about the falling in love. And then at the end of the movie, you have kind of the happily ever after, or the happy for now at least. And so this movie's about what happens after that happily ever after. And it's actually a lot more work and a lot more complicated than the walking through a field kissing scene.
Absolutely. So, okay, I've seen a lot of internet criticism, like you were mentioning, like, oh, no, I don't want to see trouble in their relationship. But as someone who watches these high school films, I actually rather enjoyed it because, okay, so, you know, they make a lot of allusions to, like, John Hughes films and other like, high school films. And those films, like, never have sequels, right? Like, it's just like, oh, they meet, it's happily ever after. But of course, there's two people meeting in high school. That's not always the case. And every relationship's going to have challenges. So honestly, I thought it was nice and refreshing to see some kind of challenges come up. Like I said, we don't get a lot of sequels in high school films. That's just the honest truth.
Yeah, that's true. And especially with contemporary high school movies, like I think with, like, say, the more dystopian or fantasy movies, they tend to get more sequels, but not where it's just about a couple of in high school and what they're going through. And I actually think it's really good and important. As much as, like, I would say P.S. I Still Love You isn't as fun as the first movie, but it feels, like, real in a lot of ways. I know there's been criticism about, like, oh, like, poor Lara Jean, she's got a hot boyfriend and then this other hot guy likes her. Like, that's not that's not realistic. But, I mean, aside from, like, just how dreamy the guys are, I actually think it is very realistic in the sense that when you're in high school and you're in a relationship, it doesn't stop you from being attracted to other people or interested in other people. But at the same time, you know, you're experiencing all this for the first time, so you're not necessarily equipped to deal with those feelings as effectively as you might be as an adult. And so I think, like, it's very interesting and realistic in that sense. And also, I love that it's kind of a movie that is just about Lara Jean's feelings and her internal world. Like, you don't really see many movies that are just about teen girls' feelings. And I think that's really refreshing.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Like, you know, I couldn't agree more with that. So obviously, we know that there's another film here. This is going to be the middle of a trilogy. So I understand, like, maybe if it ended at this film, I'd be a little disappointed that this film wasn't as peppy as the first one. But, you know, I'm all in on Lara Jean's story. So, like, it's not disappointing me there at all. Another criticism I saw, but somewhat related, is, well, you know, Peter was somewhat seen as a god in the first film, at least from the internet, right? He was like the internet darling. And this film kind of, for lack of a better word, humanizes him. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter like maybe not liking that. I mean, what's your opinion on Peter in this film?
It's interesting because I think the first movie, he definitely was more of an ideal guy than he is in the books at all. So I think in the first book, he still is very much that, like, you know, he is Peter Kavinsky, but he is a more real Peter Kavinsky. He makes a lot of mistakes. And so I think that came through more in the second movie, what you actually see in the books, which is stuff like he still talks to Jen, even though it makes Lara Jean uncomfortable. And we find out that he was actually waiting for Jen in the hot tub. He wasn't waiting for Lara Jean, which I think that's really upset a lot of people, because obviously that hot tub scene in the first movie is quite romantic and
absolutely
swoony.
Hi.
Were you with Jen today?
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Listen, she was upset because there's some things happening with her mom and her dad, and she just wanted to talk to someone who understands. That's it.
That's it?
Minsky, let's go!
Peter, that is everything. She's trying to prove to you that no matter what is going on in your life, when she calls, you come running. And when push comes to shove, you pick her. You pick her every single time.
That's bullshit, okay? I pick you. Lara Jean, when there was an actual choice, I picked you.
An actual choice? Like, what does that even mean?
She took that video. I told her that if she ever hurt you again, then we were done.
So you knew?
Yeah, Lara Jean.
You denied it.
Because you guys already have so much bad blood between you two. I didn't want to. I was just trying to
protect her, like always.
To protect you.
Peter!
Covey.
Seriously, let's go. Sorry, LJ, but yeah.
Can we please talk about this later?
How did she know?
What?
That night, I said I was going to bed, and Jen knew exactly where you were. How did she know? You were waiting at the hot tub for her, weren't you?
Peter!
You and I weren't, like, really together yet.
And that's why she took the video. And if I hadn't come down to find you, you and Jen would be together and you and I would have never happened.
Look, I think he's still lovely and he's still a great guy in a lot of ways. And I think it's good to have him not be that perfect ideal type. And also I think that's kind of what the plot is about in a way. It's about her, you know, maybe Lara Jean in the first movie idealized Peter. And then once she's with him, she's realizing, oh, he's not that perfect guy. Whereas John Ambrose is looking to her like this perfect guy, but it's because she's not with him, right? So I'm sure if she had chosen John Ambrose and was in a relationship with him, she would then find out these faults coming through. And that's ultimately what the PS I Still Love You is about. It's about her learning to differentiate between the fantasy and the reality and choose the reality, even though it's harder and it's not as perfect and wonderful and rainbow and sunshine all the time. It's more meaningful.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. I think we're on the same page. I've seen a lot of like team John Ambrose stuff. And I came to the same conclusion as you. Like, if for some reason the tables were turned, I bet she would still be idolizing Peter and she would see the flaws in John Ambrose. You know, because, like, I don't know, maybe we have the perspective of adults, but when you date someone, you're obviously going to learn their flaws as they're going to learn your flaws. Like, that just, that it is what it is. That's what learning someone's all about. But maybe it's not, you know, something that high schoolers might not know, but it's nice to see this journey, if that makes sense. It's nice to see Lara Jean, like, figure this stuff out, because rarely do we get films about this part.
Really, I think it's really exciting and refreshing. And like I said before, like, it's not as fun as the first movie.
No, I agree.
I think especially for high school students, like, it's important to see that kind of relationship depicted, that it's not all perfect.
No, absolutely. One thing I wanted to mention before we like talk about some scenes and such, they seem to have changed the director.
Yeah. it's a pattern and it's a problem that
yes.
These kind of, especially teen movies, have female directors and they kind of go under the radar and no one has many expectations of them. And, you know, to everyone's surprise, they suddenly are very successful. And then for the sequel, they dump the female director and bring in a man. I think, you know, it's happened a few times. It happened with Twilight, for instance.
Yes.
And I just think it's a major problem.
So I actually was just talking about Twilight with someone. And then watching this film research, I'm like, what the hell? And to be honest with you, on this podcast, it's happened a couple times now. So I haven't seen anything on the internet like about why either. So I'm really confused. The director, Michael Fimangarni, I don't know, whatever. He was a cinematographer from the first film, but I don't know. You have this breakaway success. Why not go with the person who directed the first one? I'm a little confused. And like you said, there is a pattern of this.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel good, if you know what I mean.
Doesn't at all. And it is a disappointing aspect of it, because I think there are parts of P.S. I Still Love You that kind of missteps or don't quite work as well as they did in the first movie. And I think that's down to the direction. You can see, I mean, he was a cinematographer, right? So it still has the same aesthetic.
Yes.
It's still going for the same vibe, but it's not quite hitting it. I still really enjoyed it. I just think some of the things that were mistakes in the movie probably wouldn't have happened if it still had Susan Johnson as the director.
I mean, I can't disagree with that. It's just, again, one of these weird things. You mentioned some missteps. What do you think those were?
The one that immediately springs to mind is Lara Jean's sad lip syncing. She's like, I just think that wasn't a very effective way to communicate her heartbreak. So she's just broken up with she's just broken up with Peter Kavinsky, and she's like, there's like this shot where she's like moving through the hallways of the school and she's looking directly into the camera and lip syncing to a sad song. And it took me totally out of the movie, and I think had the similar effect to other people. I've seen people tweeting about it, and I think, I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe Susan Johnson would have put that in there, but I just feel like that is not how a female director would have externalized a teen girl's feelings.
Yeah, it was a little odd, right? Like, I feel like they've set this, as you said, like aesthetic from the first film to that point. And then that happened. It just was weird, right?
It's just jarring. It's very jarring. And I don't think it worked. The comparison that sprung to mind for me was, again, with Twilight in New Moon, when Bella and Edward are broken up, and there's that actually amazing scene where Bella's sitting in her room and the camera kind of tracks around her and you just see the seasons change around her, but she doesn't move. Like, I thought that was quite an effective way to show not only her heartbreak but also time passing. And I feel like maybe they were going for something similarly conceptually here. I don't know, but it just did not work for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring that up, because like I just said, that's like literally the movie we just covered before this one. Oddly, they both take place in the Pacific Northwest, but you know, I digress. You know, like I said, that was odd. I think I'm in agreement with you, and we'll talk about like ratings and all that stuff later, but I don't hate this film. I did enjoy this film, but it certainly was not the, you know, dare I say, transformative experience of the first one. Are there any other missteps that come to mind for you?
I think it relied too heavily on voiceover. The voiceover is definitely there in the first movie, but it was much more of a lighter touch, I feel. I just noticed it so much more in the second movie, and I felt like it wasn't employed in as clever a way. I think the voiceover was much more effective in the first movie than it was in the second movie. I think P.S. I Still Love You relied on it way too much, and it didn't really add anything to the story.
I tend to agree with that. It's a funny thing, right? Like, in this film, I was more aware of it than the first film. The first film just felt like I was watching, you know, it was like a movie that was adapted from a book. And this film, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
It felt much more organic in the first movie. Just like, it's little things like that where it's like, it's very tiny and it feels like they were going for the same things as the first movie, but it just did not quite hit the mark that the first movie did. But I still did really enjoy it and I really love it. But yeah, I just wish that they had kept Susan Johnson as director.
Maybe one day we'll find out what happened, but I couldn't find any like reason. You know, so in Twilight, the excuse was, oh, we're making so many movies back to back. We need a different director so that the first director could work on the post-production. But it doesn't really make sense here, because apparently the dude who's doing this film is directing the next one. So they're just like, hey, you take the rest of the series. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and I know like when the first movie came out and people were talking, because it was so successful, people were talking about a sequel. I know Susan Johnson at the time in interviews said that she was keen to come back. So look, maybe...
You're right.
Yeah, it could have been a scheduling thing. Who knows? But I think just because it's a wider pattern, it's very concerning.
Yeah, no, exactly. One thing before we touch on some other scenes as well that I want to address So when we were speaking last time about the first film, you had said that maybe the second and third book should just be one film instead of two. After seeing P.S. I Still Love You, do you agree with that? Or do you think there's enough meat on the bone here for us another sequel, I guess?
Well, from what I've read, they're actually going to change the plot of the third one a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think they probably do need to, because honestly, not much happens in the third book. It's very much, again, it's even more of Lara Jean's internal space, which, you know, that works for a book, although it doesn't work for everyone for the book. I know, like, there are people who think the book is a little bit boring compared to the rest of the series. I still really love it. It's very much like Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean are together. There's a lot of, like, really cute scenes which don't really move the plot forward, but it's just them being cute together, which, you know, I'm not going to complain about those. But then it's about them, you know, they're going off to college. So it's pretty much about Lara Jean worrying about going to college and everything changing. And part of that is that, you know, what will happen to her and Peter. So that's kind of the central conflict of the book. But most of it is, honestly, it's just her stress baking. Like, she's trying to find this perfect cookie recipe. And, like, so much of the book is just her baking. But from what I've read, it sounds like they actually filmed part of, because they've already filmed the third movie. And
oh, really? They're done filming it? Wow.
Yeah, they did it back to back. I think mainly because Kitty, the actress that plays Kitty, is growing so fast, and they didn't want to, like, leave it another year and suddenly she's taller than Lara Jean. And
makes sense.
Yeah. So they filmed it back to back. So they filmed it already, and I'm pretty sure they filmed part of it in Seoul, in Korea. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, which that doesn't happen in the book at all. So it seems like Lara Jean and all other characters go to their mother's homeland. I don't know what will happen with the plot in that sense, but yeah, it definitely seems like they've bulked it out a little bit more.
Okay, so, I mean, that pretty much answers my question there. Huh, that should be interesting.
I'm really interested to see where they go with it. I think it's exciting. Yeah, I'm curious because I think, yeah, even for book fans, we have no idea what's going to happen.
So, side segue, you said you're working on your second book. Is this a sequel or is this a brand new book you're in?
It's a brand new book, and it's YA, young adult rom-com as well, though. It's a modern twist on Weird Science, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That excites me.
Oh, thank you. So it's about two girls who create the perfect guy, and then...
Can't wait for that one. That should be fun.
I'm editing it at the moment. So, hopefully it'll be really fun. I had fun writing it.
That's awesome. No, that's good that you didn't have to deal with, like, sequel pressure or anything like that.
Like, oh, yeah. I initially started writing a companion book, which was one of the secondary characters from my first book was the main character. And I really struggled with it because the voice and the character from the first book was really still strong in my head. And I found it hard to establish the secondary character within that. So I talked to my agent and she was like, look, just put that aside, try something different. And so that's what I did. And it was much easier. I think the idea, I would never say never, but the idea of a sequel is terrifying. And as we can see, even just from watching movies and stuff like that, it is hard to pull off.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up. That's why I'm not, like, so harsh on this film. Because, like I said, I don't see a lot of high school sequels unless they're, like, horror films or something, you know? So, all things considered, I was pretty happy with the final product.
Yeah, I was too.
It's a challenge. It really is to continue this kind of story, especially when it seemingly ends happily ever after. So what did you enjoy about this film, or do you have any like favorite scenes or favorite moments?
Oh, I loved, I thought the date that Peter and Lara went on was really cute, where they released the lanterns. And
oh yeah.
Yeah, that was really sweet. And I think the dance scene with John Ambrose and Lara Jean was really lovely as well, although I kept on screaming at my TV when they went outside, like, aren't you cold? It's snowing. Like, showing my age perhaps there. And I thought in terms of the heartbreak angle, I thought the aquarium scene was quite well done, where like they're both just really sad and actually still love each other, but are too hurt to admit it. And Peter kind of takes back the locket that he gave Lara Jean. I was so heartbroken. I was like, no, just talk to each other, guys. And I loved, actually, I really loved the scene with Jen and Lara Jean in the treehouse where they kind of, you know, it's not like they kiss and make up and everything's fine and they're friends again, but they kind of resolve some of their hurt with each other. And it's a big moment for Lara Jean because it helps her realize why Peter Kavinsky has trouble just letting go of Jen, because she hasn't let go of Jen herself.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I definitely want to get into the Jen dynamics a little later. I just want to jump back to what you said with the first date. Was this something that was in the book as well?
I don't remember it that distinctly. But like I said, it was a while ago that I read it. But
Yeah, no.
Yeah, course. I think with the book, I remember it picks up like literally like the second after the first book finishes, wow. Which is her. In the books, she actually doesn't like go to Peter Kavinsky right at the end of the book. She's kind of on her way and you don't see them get back together in the first book.
Okay.
So that's the beginning of the second book. So that's what sticks out most clearly in my head, I think, because I was like, are they together? And then I was relieved, so I can't really remember. But I remember a big day like that.
Okay, so, I mean, what I liked about this scene, I mean, overall, they felt like teenagers here. Even though they were going to a nice restaurant, they still felt like high schoolers, which is nice and refreshing.
Wow, they have big menus here.
The bigger the menu, the fancier the restaurant. Everybody knows that. It's actually a two-fork restaurant. They give you the second one just in case you knock the first one off the table.
No, that's not it.
That's what it is.
No, it's not.
Watch, you ready?
Oh. Peter, stop. Oh, it's so embarrassing.
Stop it.
Why?
Peter. It's a good thing I have my backup. Mm-hmm.
This is my first date. I've never been a girlfriend before. I hope I'm good at it.
But I really like how, yeah, he had a plan for her, but she also had a plan for him. It wasn't just like, oh, take me out, let's see what happens. And she drove to that lantern thing, which was really awesome. Both like cute wise and visually, so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and also it was really good for Lara Jean because we established in the first movie how much she hates driving, and by the end of that movie she kind of overcomes her fear to go to drive to Peter Kavinsky, and then in this movie we see that she's growing even more and she's like, no, I'm fine driving now. So it also weirdly was an important part of her character development.
Yeah.
Which also reminds me actually of like probably my favorite scene was the last one where Peter remembers that she was still afraid to drive in the snow and he shows up, even though they're broken up, to drive her. I cried so much in that scene.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was so well set up because it's mentioned, like, she says it earlier, right? Like, I just don't like driving in the snow at this point. And when it starts snowing, I think anyone's like, wait a minute, this has to be a connection here. And then he shows up and, oh, you know, it's great. And, you know, we'll talk about that more towards the end. But, you know, great little mirroring here between the first date and that. And right when we get to this first date, though, we're starting to see some of the issues in terms of it's her first date, but it's not his. And that kind of becomes like the crux of the film, like everything she's doing for the first time, but he's not because he had it with Jen. And, you know, that obviously is something that's really affecting Lara Jean. And then, you know, it goes to what you said, and it ends up with this, like, really beautiful scene in the treehouse when they have their, like, time capsule party that, like, Jen in the first film's kind of depicted as just pure evil, you know? I like here how eventually she does get humanized. Yeah, she's not the nicest person, right? But, like, we learned that, because that was a mystery, right? We learned that she did film that scene. She did film that hot tub thing. But she kind of, you know, I hate to say it, but she kind of had more of a reason to, because she was the one who was supposed to go out there. It kind of justified more of her first film actions, if that makes sense. I'm not, like, absolving her of all her sins, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think it justified her, but I think it explained it. And it, like, yeah, it gave her a motive beyond just being a bitch. And also, it also explains partially, like, you know, well, Lara Jean was friends with her. Peter Kavinsky was in a relationship with her for years, and it wasn't just about, oh, you know, she was this beautiful, popular girl. He actually did care for her deeply and still cares for her. And so, you know, I think you can't have him remain a sympathetic hero if she is nothing but a bitch, because it just does make you question why he's still talking to her. Whereas seeing her as that kind of vulnerable human, it doesn't justify all of her actions. Like, I think it's still reprehensible that she filmed and released the video of them in the hot tub.
But, yes.
But yeah, especially I think with the stuff with like her parents breaking up, and she's in a really vulnerable place, and that's why Peter feels obligated to still talk to her and make sure she's okay despite everything she's done. I think that definitely makes it understandable, but also at the same time, you understand why it hurts Lara Jean so much and why she's so upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable on both fronts. But it's just honestly, from like being in this genre, it's nice to see like a fleshed out rival, you know?
Yes.
It explains so much, and the time capsule stuff, and we'll get to John Ambrose in a second, but the time capsule stuff was really nice to see that, like, because I remember growing up, the friends you had in high school weren't necessarily the friends you had when you were younger. Not that they became enemies or something, but people change, people move on. So it was cool to see that, like, they weren't as, you know, like, Peter wasn't this, like, distant popular guy. They did have some kind of history. You know, she did have history with Jen. Even why her cool friend is skipping my memory right now.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it was nice to see that they were, like, really good friends at one point, and they had this, like, treehouse gang, and I loved it. I loved that, you know, time capsule party, and I don't know. Like, again, we don't get a lot of sequels in this genre, so it's nice to see, like, because in this we get the after, but we also get a little bit before.
It definitely adds depth to all of their dynamics. They hinted at it in the first movie, and we saw the flashback to them all at the same party, and that's when Peter and Lara Jean kissed with Spin the Bottle when they were younger and stuff like that, but you didn't really get the sense that they were all good friends and they all hung out together. And I think it was good to see that come out in this movie.
Yeah, no, I, you know, my impression in the first film, that it was just kind of like a random party, not necessarily that they were all like, you know, a group, if you want to call them that. Before we get to John Ambrose, let's talk about Chris for a little bit, since we mentioned her. I feel like she wasn't in this one as much, but she definitely gets like a nice romantic arc. What do you think about her in this film?
I mean, it was fine. I didn't really think that she needed the romantic arc. I just thought it was a bit random, especially I think with Trevor, like, I know that, like, they cast Ross Butler, who is, you know, kind of a bigger star because of Riverdale and 13 Reasons Why. And I feel like they just wanted to give him something to do. But I don't know. It felt a bit random to me. I'm not quite sure it was necessary.
Okay, so I was going to kind of ask you about that. Like, he wasn't in the first one, right?
No, he wasn't.
Okay, so it was a little odd, because I know I'd seen him before, and I was like, they're really, like, showing this guy a lot, so I thought that was interesting. Well, good to know for sure. So, kind of just want to bounce around a little bit. Laura Jean's family, we don't see the older sister too much here, but that's fine, because she's, like, really old in real life. Not really old, but you know what I mean. She's not, like... 20.
She's a grown ass married adult. Whatever. Like, she's not an 18-year-old. So, yeah.
Yes.
She's off in Scotland. That's fine.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Like, I'm okay with. I'm glad they acknowledged her, because obviously she's an important part of the first film, and she's in their family. I'm glad she got a little scene, but I'm okay with, like, minimizing her role here. But you mentioned her before. We get Kitty again. Some people said it wasn't as much as the first film. What were your thoughts on Kitty here?
I don't think there was quite as many family scenes as there was in the first movie, but I think there was a lot of other stuff going on, so that's okay. And I think what was there of the family was quite lovely. Kitty is still being that meddlesome little teenager, but also, like, she kind of is always right. So I can understand why she thinks so strongly that she should meddle, because with Lara Jean and Peter, it worked out, and then she's trying to matchmake her dad and the neighbor, and that works out in the end as well. But I think it was really great that it touched upon their grief over their mother and the way they kind of keep her memory alive. Also, the way the girls are so ready and accepting of their dad finally dating again and having a new partner, and that they just want him to be happy. I thought that was really, like, really touching.
I think you're right in terms of, we don't get as much of it, but they still... How can I say? They still use the scenes that we did get for, like, important stuff. Like you said, you know, with the mother and the whole, like, was it like a Korean New Year, I believe, or something like that? Where the girls dressed up in those really nice outfits, and they met the cousin, who I love. I love that cousin. What was her name? I forgot.
Let me see. I can't remember her name, but yeah.
Oh, Haven. Haven was her name. I wrote it down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was good to show, you know, the Korean heritage of the girls as well. I think it's something that you definitely don't see represented in teen movies. So it was good to emphasize that.
Absolutely, because that was one of the, you know, the better parts of the first film as well, just like getting this like Asian and Asian American representation. And then you mentioned, of course, the dad's love arc. What did you think of this specifically?
I thought it was lovely. I thought it was really sweet. Like the dad kind of gets a bit dorky and the girls decide that he needs help. And yeah, I think it was just like wholesome, and like it felt like a good extension of his character and their family as well, especially with say like Lara Jean, you know, she's getting ready to leave the nest eventually. She's going to go off to college. So I understand why she would maybe want to make sure that her dad is in a happy place before she leaves.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Yeah, like I found it nice, like harmless, but very nice. I wonder if I'm sure since they're filming them back to back, but I wonder if this will continue in the next film. I'm really curious now that you mentioned that they actually go to Korea, like where this whole family dynamic goes. Maybe we'll get more of it in the sequel, because obviously, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they bring Peter to Korea. We'll see, but it should be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm really curious. The third book, the spoilers for the book, but the wedding of Dr. Covey and Trina is a major part of the plot. I presume that that'll happen in the third movie, but I don't know how it's going to play out exactly, especially with part of it being in Korea. Who knows? But yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I don't think they would get married in Korea. That would be very weird, but we'll see. One thing I wanted to mention quick, the opening is Adventures in Babysitting, the same opening from that film with Elizabeth Shue. I'm glad they acknowledged it and happy to see it. You know, that's why I kind of love Kitty. She just tells it like it is, you know? So she does her thing, and I hope she keeps doing her thing in the next film as well.
She's great. I would love a spin-off where it's like Kitty in a few years' time, you know, and see what adventures she gets up to when she's in high school. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm all for that. Sign me up. That'd be very fun. Okay, so let's get to this John Ambrose arc then. I know you read the book a while ago, but was this John Ambrose different from the book John Ambrose, besides for the things you said already?
I mean, in the book, you see more of him. So, I mean, just by virtue of a movie running time versus a book, you just get to spend more time with the character. So I feel like probably the relationship between them was a little bit better developed. I think what was there in the movie was very good, and you definitely understand why Lara Jean is attracted to him. But I think I would have liked to see a little bit more of their connection, and I think you get that in the book a little bit more.
Okay. Jordan Fisher, as you said, was like awesome in this film. He's really now becoming sort of the internet darling. We got a lot of like good scenes, especially at the nursing home when they're putting together, you know, the whole party. It is interesting. Like, I didn't know from the first film that he was actually Peter's like best friend or like one of his good friends. So I did actually feel the tension when they were like together a couple times, especially the fact that he doesn't know that Lara Jean and Peter are dating, but I definitely like felt it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, that was such a good scene. The treehouse scene is so tense because you've got like John Ambrose, clearly like he's been flirting with Lara Jean and he's interested in her, and she hasn't let him know that she's in a relationship. So he thinks that it's going somewhere, and that he tries to have these little in jokes with her, and it's just like, it's sweet on his behalf, but it also makes you cringe because she's just put herself in this really terrible situation. And then you've got Peter on the other side of her looking at her like, what the hell's going on? and you do get that sense that they were rivals when they were younger as well, to an extent. So yeah, I thought it was a really effective scene.
Yeah, it was interesting because You know, sometimes in these films, it can come off as, like, toxic and, like, you know, crappy, like, possessive, you know? But I think they both had reasons for feeling the way they felt. I didn't feel like John Ambrose was coming on too strong, especially, like, the fact that he didn't know. And maybe, you know, maybe Peter was a little bit, like, not trusting, but it wasn't to an extent where I felt like this is icky or something. You know what I mean? Like, especially for high schoolers.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think it was toxic at all. I think he justifiably was questioning why she hadn't told John Ambrose that she was in a relationship. Like, that does ring a warning bell that he's like, why are you trying to hide this? And I think, you know, I think the way he deals with it isn't a really terrible way either. Like, he tries to talk to her about it, and, you know, they very quickly do resolve it within that scene, and he kind of hugs her and he's like, let's not fight. Obviously the issue isn't totally resolved, because then they go on to fight again, but a lot of it is just stemming from Lara Jean's insecurities rather than his feelings over what she's done.
Yeah, no, you know, couldn't agree more. So you mentioned, you know, you really enjoy the ending. Obviously they're broken up, and there's that the whole Starball scene, which is really nice. I'm glad. So the one thing that I was a little curious about, like, the stuff they find is like from like the 20s and 30s. And I'm glad they didn't, like, imply that these people are that old, you know? Because, like, they're not 100 years old and such. Because, and it's good because, like, you know, they play disco music and things. Like, I'm like, okay, that's fine. But this the party they host is really pretty, really nice, really romantic. John Ambrose, you know, she tells John Ambrose she broke up with Peter, and they share this, you know, winter kiss. And then she kind of breaks his heart, because it's Peter who, you know, who she's thinking about. And Peter shows up just when she's going out to see him. And it's the whole thing with, you know, he knew she didn't like to drive in the snow. And it's a really cute moment.
You said you didn't like driving in the snow, right? Break my heart, Covey. Break my heart into 1,000 pieces. Do whatever you want.
I love you.
I love you too.
Any other thoughts about this scene, or even like the fate of John Ambrose, perhaps?
I feel for John Ambrose. I would love a spin-off with John Ambrose where he gets someone who loves him as much as Lara Jean loves Peter Kavinsky. Like, I think he deserves it. He's such a sweet guy. And I feel so sad for him. Like, it's sad for him that, you know, his heart kind of had to get crushed in order for Lara Jean to figure out her own feelings. But he's also a good guy, and you can tell, like, he's not toxic about it. He's not getting angry at her. I think that's really important to show on screen as well, that, like, teenage boys responding to rejection in a healthy way.
Yeah, so I actually thought it was, like, in a weird way, like, nice he got rejected, because it's just, it's more realistic, and it's more, I don't know, as long as he doesn't, like, take this moment and completely change his personality to be like, oh, all women are evil or something like that, which I don't think he will. He doesn't seem like that kind of person. I know he will find someone and he will be happy because he's a nice guy, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, come on. Like, the whole internet's in love with him. He would have no trouble.
No, exactly. Exactly. I wonder if they didn't already shoot the other film, if they would have... Well, who knows? I don't know how much they're going to include him in the third film, if at all. But I wonder if they hadn't shot the other film and then they saw this response to the character, if they would have, like, added him more to this third film. It's weird when you shoot things back to back where you can't, like, react that way. So, you know, I'm curious if we're going to ever see him again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I feel like we can't really, if we want to follow Lara Jean and Peter's story effectively, because he isn't a part of it anymore, and he probably shouldn't be a part of it anymore. But I mean, he's such a great character, and Jordan Fisher is so charming as him, so it would be a shame to not see him again. But I also don't think it would make a lot of sense for the story. I would love look, even if it's not as Joan Ambrose McLaren, I would love Jordan Fisher to do more rom-coms and be like the lead who gets the person in the end.
I'm sure he will too. Like yeah. After this, like there's no question about it in my mind. But you're right, it's probably bound for the way of Josh.
Yes.
It's kind of going to be like a Bond girl thing, maybe. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if we'll get a third Lara Jean guy in the next film. Or if it'll just be about the relationship. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't think we will, and I don't think we should, because I think that would just get a little bit too repetitive. If they want to have more tension, they need to have different tension. But, look, I who knows? But I think, look, maybe she goes to Seoul and maybe she meets a Korean guy. Who knows what's going to happen? But I hope not. I hope it's just like Peter and Lara being mostly happy and just, you know, maybe having a little bit of stress but staying together.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see whenever that one comes out. I mean, hopefully we won't have to wait too long if they've already shot it and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that they haven't announced the release date yet, because they have already shot it, but I would guess it would be next year, just to space it out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I for sure. Any other scenes or moments you want to mention in the film that you liked or just want to talk about?
I think just overall, it was just really great the way that they explored Lara Jean's insecurities. I thought it was very relatable. I know some people seem to be annoyed by her and kind of her actions, but I thought, I don't know, maybe it was just me in high school, but I completely understood like how she felt and the way she acted.
What have you seen that people have been annoyed with specifically? Anything specific?
Well, I think it was just like, I've seen people saying like, oh, this is like, how is she, you know, creating problems when she's got a great boyfriend and then she's also got this other great guy interested in her. Like, she has this blessed life. And it's like, I understand that she's an insecure, inexperienced teenager, and you don't always act in rational ways when you're that person.
Yeah. So Jenna, on this show, we kind of say that a lot. Like, the biggest like excuse for like why characters are doing things is they're teenagers. Remember yourself in high school. Like, you didn't always, you know, act rationally with things. So yeah, I didn't think anything she did was out of turn or odd.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I get that as like a YA author as well. I have reviews from adults sometimes, because adults do read YA, and they're like, oh, this, you know, she's so annoying, she was like so immature or this and that, and it's just like, they're teenagers, like that's the kind of the point.
Oh my god, yeah, no, exactly. That's just really silly.
Yeah. I think don't watch teen movies if you don't want to see people acting like teenagers.
exactly. You know, couldn't say it better. So not a lot of critical response yet, because as Netflix movies go, like, not all the critics are down with it, despite like Netflix films getting nominated for Oscars and stuff. But Rotten Tomatoes has 73% fresh by the critics, but 49% by the audience. So that's pretty polarizing.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that low.
Yeah, I was surprised too when I looked it up. And again, it's really early in the process, so that could change, and I don't know what people were expecting, to be honest with you. I don't agree with that consensus, but since you've been on High School Slumber Party, we've changed things a little bit when it comes to rating the films. I'm an idiot, and I should have figured this out sooner, but it's High School Slumber Party, and I don't know how they grade in Australia, but in the United States, we grade A to F. I know it's not the same everywhere, so A obviously being the best and F being the worst. So what would you give this film?
Oh, good question. I would say like B+.
Yeah, you know, that's the same rating I had. I had between B and B+. And for me, pretty solid for especially a sequel like this. It's not like the sequel ruined things. For me, that's my like minimum expectation. Don't ruin the first film.
I thought it was it's a nice addition. Like, I'm happy to see the story continue, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it, and I've already watched it twice, and we'll watch it again, and I'm really excited for the third movie. So like, it ticked a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was something where, how can I put it? Like, it felt like it belonged in this universe. You know, maybe the original director coming back would have made it feel more like that, but It didn't take me out of it, and I'm happy to continue on to the next one. It's not like I'm giving up here, so I definitely want to continue the story, and, you know, I'm just happy where it ended, too. So like, I guess I'm going to say solid B for me, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, look, the first movie is definitely like an A++. Like, I loved it so much. So this movie didn't quite live up to that, but that's okay. I think it would be very hard to live up to that, and especially yes. with where the story goes. It's just, I think the falling in love story is always going to be more fun than the happily ever after story. But I'm glad it exists, and I definitely want to continue, yeah, in the world of Lara Jean and Peter Kavinsky.
So I've added a couple of awards to this show where it might not be applicable here. So the first one I have, it's called the Wooderson Award. It's named after Matthew McConaughey's character in the film Dazed and Confused. And it's, for me, it's the character who there's some of them in the film, but you'd like to see more of, maybe if it's in a spinoff film or even more in this film. You know, famously, Matthew McConaughey in that film was only supposed to be like on one scene, and he did so well that they added him to like a lot more scenes. So was there anyone in this film who you just would like to see more of?
Oh, it's got to be John Ambrose McLaren. Like, I love him, and I love Jordan Fisher. I want to see more of him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's like a runaway winner to that category, whether it's that character or this. And again, maybe it's a spinoff movie, and we know that's probably not going to happen, but you leave with the feeling of wanting to see more of him, that's for sure. I couldn't agree more with that. Now, the next award is very applicable for this film, because this character was mentioned in the first film, and this is the Long Duck Dong Award. Needs no explanation, but this is a character who probably, whether it be for problematic reasons or just not belonging, would be eliminated, should be eliminated from this film, or, you know, just the least important character, I guess, if there is one.
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think. I don't think like anyone would be eliminated. I mean, I know I said like I thought the Chris and Trevor kind of relationship was a bit random, but I think it is important that like Lara Jean has a friend who is at school with her, even though she's not necessarily the most present friend. I think that's important. And, you know, Trevor as a character, like, he's fine. Like, he's not totally necessary, but I think he does like round out the idea that they had this friendship group. So I don't know. That's a tough one. Is there anyone new? I mean, they kind of did it to Josh, right?
That's a good call. I was going to say there's no one like, so Trevor, yeah, but like it's not like they inserted him into plot lines that he shouldn't have been in and stuff, and it wasn't too distracting, but I think you got it right there. They did it for us with Josh. It was already done before the movie started, so we'll give the award to Josh, and kudos to the producers for
thinking ahead, I
guess.
Yeah, no complaints.
And the last award is just the Cameron Frye Award. Famously, like, Alan Ruck was 30 years old playing a high schooler in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Was there anyone who looked too old for the character? I know when we talked about Dumplin', we were kind of saying that about Bo. Was there anyone here who you felt that way about?
I think as much as I love Jordan Fisher, he doesn't really look like a 16-year-old boy. I mean, none of them look 16, but he looks early 20s at least. But it wasn't like distracting like Bo was in Dumplin'. Like, that was that was just like, he looked like a middle-aged man. Like, so they all looked like Hollywood teens, which is I think the best you can get in a lot of these movies. They don't look like actual teens, but they at least look like Hollywood teens. I think it's a problem when they don't even look like Hollywood teens, they just look like adults.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I think overall, like, the casting was pretty good. What did you think?
No, okay, so yeah, I think you're right there. It wasn't terrible. It's weird when they mix it, where they have people who look like actual teenagers and then people who look like Hollywood teens. But I think everyone is in the same range here, and that's totally fine. But, you know, as we're talking about it, I'm going to say the same thing as we said for, Josh, is that they kind of, the older sister who's in college, I keep forgetting her name, but.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She wasn't in the film enough for me to give her this award, but if she was, theoretically, then she probably would have gotten it.
Absolutely. Like, she does not remotely, like, she looks like adult, and that was a little bit distracting in the first movie. So I was kind of glad, as much as I love the sister relationship, I was kind of glad they minimized her part in the second movie.
Yeah. Now, maybe they're listening to this show too, because they've answered a lot of problematic things in high school films. Okay, so every week I ask my guests what kind of themed sleeping bag they would have for the film that we actually there's two more questions, so forget that part. But so my next question is, what kind of themed sleeping bag would you have for this film if you had to pick? So, you know, when you're a kid and there's just like sleeping bags with cartoons on it or whatever, but if you had to have To All the Boys, P.S. I Love You, themed sleeping bag, what would it look like?
It would have Peter Kavinsky's face emblazoned on it.
So I want to be clear. You like John Ambrose, but you're still hardcore team Peter.
100%. I love both of them, but I think Lara Jean made the right choice. I would love to see John Ambrose like have his own story and his own romance, like I said, and I really enjoy him as a character, but I'm still 100% team Peter.
Oh, great. You know, great to hear, because, I mean, I don't know. Did you change your Twitter name again to something, Peter Kavinsky?
It's the same as what it was last time, which is Peter Kavinsky's whoa, whoa, whoa. But also, this was the major problem with this movie. They didn't have Peter's whoa, whoa, whoas. Like, they just, I don't know if...
You're right.
I don't know if Noah Centineo has become conscious so he doesn't do it anymore, or if they deliberately told him not to do it. But don't they realize this was a major part of his character that people loved?
Wow, I didn't pick up on that, but you're totally right. That's disappointing. Oh my God.
That was the most disappointing part of the movie, I have to say.
We should have got it at least once, you know?
Yes.
Like one key. Just give a little fan service. This is Netflix, you know? Like, that's fine. We needed that. Damn, you're right.
Very disappointing.
So, you know, last thing I'll ask that I ask every week is, it's called Rent Two Movies, Get One Free. It just, you know, when I was younger, we used to go to the video store. We used to, you know, be a weekend, maybe for a sleepover, and we never rented one movie. They usually have a sale where we rented one movie or rented two movies and got one free. So obviously Netflix isn't like renting like that. But if you and I were having our slumber party and we rented To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You, what other two movies I'm going to disqualify the first one. What other two movies would fit in our slumber party for us to watch? Could be anything.
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I feel like it's got to be 16 Candles because they mention it in the first movie. And I know they mention Adventures in Babysitting in this one, but I just feel like 16 Candles feels a little bit more appropriate for this movie, maybe, for the vibe.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't like a very Adventures in Babysitting vibe. It was just kind of a throwaway thing.
That was kind of random. But yeah, and then maybe, gosh, I feel like Pretty in Pink, I would say, because it has the love triangle aspect.
Oh, and that's true.
Yeah, and the idea that like she's kind of like tossing up between like her like ideal guy and maybe you know, the best friend type who like is there for her but she doesn't have as strong feelings for him. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Fine night to me. I mean, that sounds good. That's awesome. So, you know, really appreciate those selections and really appreciate you taking the time out, Jenna, to come on. Hopefully you'll come on for the third film. Would really appreciate that, because it's always a blast talking about this series with you. All high school films, but this series for sure. I mean, I was so happy watching this and happy that you could come on so soon after the release to talk about it.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll come back anytime.
So I know you mentioned, you know, your writing and stuff in your books, but if you want to just plug whatever you need to plug or mention that again, especially since the book is coming out in the U.S. soon.
Oh, my book is What I Like About Me, and it's about a teen girl who is having kind of the summer that she's not having the summer that she expected. Things aren't going according to plan, and it's about insecurity and friendship and teen love as well. So it comes out in April 2020, so look out for it.
Thanks so much. And where can we follow you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I'm at Jenna Guillaume which is G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E. Kind of an annoying name, but yeah.
Well, once again, Jenna, thanks so much for coming on. It's such a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Big thanks to Jenna for stopping by. She's always great, always so knowledgeable about this subject matter. Can't wait to finally read her book in the United States. What I Like About Me, coming out this April. You guys in the U.S., you want to check it out? And you guys around the world where it is released, you should check it out right now. Why not? Thank you again, Jenna, for stopping by. So, question, how did you like our new little award segment thing? I just realized that was like the first time we actually had it on an episode. I've been recording a bunch of episodes, so sometimes I'm not sure what order what's in. I'm an idiot, I know. But I think it's fun. I'm really enjoying asking them. Let me know what you think on social media. Remember, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we are on Twitter. And you could also email at highschoolslumberparty@gmail.com. That's highschoolslumberparty@gmail.com. So, next week, come on, you know you want it, you know you want to hear the continuation of Kate Hudson and my chat on Twilight New Moon. I think the wine kicks in part two here, and it gets a little zany. Actually, haven't played it back yet, I'm a little worried, but I've committed, we've committed, we're talking Twilight, and guess what? As I said on this episode, we're staying in the Pacific Northwest. I was shocked with how many similarities between To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You, and Twilight New Moon have. Maybe I shouldn't. They're both like YA teen romances, and they're both the second book adaptations, but I don't know. They didn't feel like they'd be in the same world, you know, but oh my god, I can't wait. I'm going to play the trailer once again for Twilight New Moon.
The Volturi are the closest thing my world has to royalty. They enforce the law.
Vampires have laws.
You're a human who knows entirely too much about us. They could kill us all.
You just don't belong in my world, Bella.
I belong with you.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. Please just promise me you won't do anything reckless.
It's like a huge hole has been punched through my chest.
I know what he did to you, but Bella, I would never, ever do that.
There's only one way I know to see him.
So, you're an adrenaline junkie now? You're dead.
What?
He's going to the Volturi. He wants to die too.
He left you, Bella. He didn't want you anymore.
I have to go.
He's gonna make a scene. The Volturi will kill him if he reveals himself in the sunlight.
No, Edward, don't! I'm scared. A little.
No, please, please!
So your homework for next week is to watch Twilight New Moon yet again, because that's what we're talking about, and who knows, it'll probably be more enjoyable this time, better this time. Maybe you enjoyed it the first time, I don't know. Let me know, that's for sure. So, a couple other things I want for homework, I wrote them down. I'm going to be like To All the Boys on Netflix, because you know when you watched it, boom, right away they were like, rewatch the first one again. Well, rewatch To All the Boys I Loved Before again if you want, but definitely listen to our original episode in the archives at cageclub.me or wherever you get your podcasts. listen to that one, then maybe listen to this one again and be like, huh, did their opinions change? Well, I don't know. I thought that was a fire episode, and I thought this one was a fire episode as well. So listen to whatever old episodes you want on cageclub.me, but especially the two All the Boys I Loved Before. That's my recommendation. My other homework is I'm going to be petty, get John Cusack to unblock us on Twitter, because I can't believe he's still blocking us. But also, let me know if you're Team John Ambrose, Team Peter, or Team someone else. I'm very curious to hear your opinion on the subject matter. So, getting a little tired. It's getting time for bed. It's getting time to crawl into our sleeping bags and slumber the night away. So I'm going to leave you with another song from the soundtrack. It's a cover of a song I actually really like. The song is Age of Consent, but this is by a band named Kaitana. I liked it when I heard it on the movie, so I actually downloaded it. Do people say that? Do the kids say downloaded it? I don't know. But it's actually on my regular Brian playlist now. So thanks so much, guys, and don't forget to do your homework. Later, dudes.
It's over. Go home. Go.